We pick back up in this discussion of chapter 14 of Revelation. And as we previously mentioned, Mount Zion, that we see in chapter 14, verse 1, is primarily a reference to the protection God provides for His people. And as we've been talking about, as we're beginning to see, we'll see it even maybe a little bit more with some of the background, outside Zion, outside the city, there will only be destruction as predicted by the prophets, which we put together what we saw in Isaiah 60 and 62 and 63, but it seems to be even more clear when we turn to Zechariah, Zechariah chapter 14. Notice, as we turn to Zechariah chapter 14, particularly verses 2 through 5 and 11 through 16. So, Zechariah 14, 2 through 6, "For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations, as he fights in the day of battle, and in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it toward the south." Verse 5, "Then you shall flee through my mountain valley, for the mountain valley shall reach to Azal. Yes, you shall flee, as you fled from the earthquake, in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Thus the Lord my God will come, and all the saints with you." Then verses 11 through 16. "The people shall dwell in it, and no longer shall there be utter destruction, but Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited." So, Jerusalem, this idea of Zion, the city, and of course that parallel with what we even see in Revelation, Zion here, chapter 14, verse 1 of Revelation, later on, well, even previously the city was stated, but later on you have the heavenly Jerusalem. And so you're going to have this idea of Jerusalem, Zion. Notice then you have within verses 11 through 16, verse 12 of Zechariah 14, "And this shall be the plague with which the Lord will strike all the people who fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall dissolve while they stand on their feet, their eyes shall dissolve in their sockets, and their tongue shall dissolve in their mouths. It shall come to pass in that day that a great panic from the Lord will be among them. Everyone will seize the hand of his neighbor and raise his hand against his neighbor's hand. Judah also will fight at Jerusalem, and the wealth of all the surrounding nations shall be gathered together, gold, silver, and apparel in great abundance. Such also shall be the plague on the horse and on the mule, on the camel, on the donkey, and on the cattle that will be in those camps. So shall this plague be." It's going to be very interesting that what we're going to see with the upcoming bowl series of judgment with the bowls, which is also going to be reminiscent of the trumpets. We'll plan to get into that. But we're going to see what started in chapter 15 and chapter 16, we're going to see it really play out with some of these, the idea of the plagues based on the Exodus plagues. Notice Zechariah 14, 16. "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So, just to state that this affirms that Jerusalem will dwell in security and the rebellious nations will be defeated in the vicinity of Jerusalem. And as we mentioned, Zechariah 14, 2 through 4, God will stand on the Mount of Olives in front of Jerusalem to destroy the enemy armies who have invaded Jerusalem. So this is providing perhaps more concrete background for what we're discussing about the safety and security within Zion, within this idea of Jerusalem, which is all a spiritual concept within the New Testament, but has precedent for the whole idea of Zion in the Old Testament being where God meets his people. And the idea of worship and security, especially within the Psalm, you know, what the Psalm says as we've looked at that, to find refuge and security in Zion. So, notice then, back to Joel. Joel chapter 3, we said we would look at more than just Joel 3, verse 13. So now notice Joel 3, verse 2. I will also gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will enter into judgment with them there on account of my people, my heritage, Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations. They have also divided up my land. And then notice verses 11 and 12 of Joel 3. Assemble and come, all you nations, and gather together all around, cause your mighty ones to go down there, O Lord. And verse 12, let the nations be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the surrounding nations. And of course, we read verse 13. Verse 13 is primarily going to be what's represented here in Revelation 14 about the dual-fold judgment, two pictures of the same judgment. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, tread, or go down, for the winepress is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. And verse 14, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. So God's going to enter into judgment with the surrounding nations outside Jerusalem in the nearby valley of Jehoshaphat. So it is in this context that Joel 3:13, which is the primary background for our study here in Revelation 14, 14 through 20, describes the judgment as both a grain harvest. That's what you have with the judge, Jesus. And then notice you have treading of the winepress in which the vats overflow. So you have both the reaping idea with the sickle, and then of course you have then the reaping, the harvest of the vine of the earth, the grapes, and then being tread, and the vats overflowing due to great wickedness. And then notice Revelation 14:20. Where we have this statement that the blood goes up to the horses' bridles. The winepress was trampled outside the city, and blood came out of the winepress up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 stadia. We're going to talk a little bit about that. But this blood rising is up to the horses' bridles. It's figurative battle language. That's what we have. It's to understand this concept of battle language. And it is hyperbole, functioning as hyperbole. And what is it emphasizing? Well, it's emphasizing the severe and the unqualified nature of the judgment. There's not going to be any mercy in this judgment. And that's why, of course, repent before there is this judgment without mercy. And so notice then you have Revelation 19, verses 17 through 19, which we're going to see provides really a parallel picture for what we're seeing here. And it pictures the slaughter of the ungodly in association with what? Battle and horses. So let's read Revelation 19, 17 through 19. Sometimes you'll see a picture and then you'll see another picture and complementary or parallel. Revelation 19, 17 through 19. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather together for the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of captains, kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses and all, and of those who sit on them, and the flesh of all people, free and slave, both small and great. And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. So, then when we look at this idea of 1,600 stadia, the spreading of blood for a distance of what is in Greek stadia, 1,600 stadia, some of your translations will have about 200 miles. Others, if they're trying to be more precise, would have 184 miles. And yet, if you're trying to convert that to different, the metric system, 300 kilometers, that distance of 1,600 stadia from the city, it's interesting that that's the approximate length of Palestine measured from Tyre to the border of Egypt, which was technically 1,664 stadia. So this would be symbolic of the extent or completeness of the nation's destruction prophesied to occur outside Jerusalem. So when you have, of course, you really have that idea of complete, utter, and without mercy, the extent to which and the severity of the judgment with the blood rising up to the horses' bridles. But you also have that it is quite complete, it's quite extensive with this imagery of 1,600 stadia, up to the horses' bridles for 1,000. So up to the horses' bridles, so it's this high and this deep, deep and wide, if you will, deep and wide. The judgment. Yeah, it's interesting if you're familiar with the song about God's love being deep and wide. Well, here it's the judgment of God is both deep and wide. And that's probably not a concept that we've heard as much about. Notice then 1600 is also the product of the squares of 4 and 10, both of which are figurative for completeness within the book. So, you know, the times that we have four, you know, four living creatures, and we could show a number of other instances, but then you have a number of times that 10 is actually mentioned, tribulation 10 days. We could show a number of other instances about 4 and 10, they're figurative for completeness in the book. But notice, the number also could well have been thought of as the square of 40. 40 squared, 1600, a traditional number of punishment. Think 40 stripes. 40 lashes, 40 stripes. It is a traditional number of punishment. So it could be one or all those ideas. It completely conveyed to them this idea that this is quite a comprehensive judgment. So then that brings us to the next section. The next section in Revelation chapter 15, verse 1, which is really going to extend through all of chapter 16. So 15, 1 to 16. So chapters 15 and 16, you have here in the first four verses of chapter 15, the saints glorify God and the Lamb for their majesty. You could use terminology like their incomparable greatness. Their incomparable attributes. I'm choosing to use the idea of their majesty to grasp this idea of their incomparability in achieving redemption and executing judgment. So notice chapter 15, verses 1 through 4. Then I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them the wrath of God is complete. We just talked about the completion, the completeness of God's judgment. And 15:1 certainly gives us that idea. The wrath of God is complete. And I also saw verse 2, something like a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who have the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, some of our translations, and over the number of his name, standing on the sea of glass, having harps of God. They sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, great and marvelous are your works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true are your ways, the King of the nations. Verse 4, who shall not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy, for all nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgments have been manifested or revealed. So, the saints are glorifying God and the Lamb for their greatness in achieving both redemption and executing judgment. Then what we're going to see really in the rest of this section, if we want to summarize that, verses chapter 15, verse 5, through the end of chapter 16, verse 16:21, you have the seven bold judgments. I would rather really say, I have a hard time correcting all of the times I say judgments. It's really one judgment, but it's a series. It's a series of judgment, but it's the seven bowls of judgment. And so I really didn't need to have the word judgments, but if you see them as, okay, yes, we see them as a complete whole, then we could say, okay, all this whole series, individual judgments, but it's a complete judgment. That's the idea. God punishes the ungodly because of their persecution and idolatry. And once again, this is really nothing new, is it? We're going to see really a rather blunt picture with the judgment going on with these bowls, with what we saw with the trumpets, the judgment of the trumpets. And so God is punishing the ungodly because of their persecution and idolatry. And we'll develop that a little bit more to show that you don't have one judgment going on with the trumpets and a separate judgment going on with the bowls, though some would contend that. I believe, just as we've already maintained, as we mentioned, an instance in chapter 7 where you have two pictures of the same group of God's redeemed people who work and worship and serve Him as priests in His temple. And so we also see that the end of Revelation 14, you have two pictures of judgment. You have the harvest. You have the harvest of both the grain and the harvest of the grapes, but yet both of those reapings are the same kind of judgment, pictured in two different ways. And I would also argue that the bowl judgment, the judgment of the bowls and judgment of the trumpets, are to be seen similarly. And what we're going to have, we'll address that in more detail. But notice in chapter 15, verses 5 through 18, we're going to have the resumption of the introduction, and we're going to talk about where was this introduced. It was introduced here in the same chapter, but the introduction is resumed concerning the seven bowl judgments. So the introduction to the bowls, it began in 15:1, because when John says, "I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues," right now you don't hear anything about bowls. You just know that they have the seven last plagues. In them the wrath of God is complete. It's interrupted, as we see in verses 2 through 4, and it's giving honor, praise, admiration to God for redemption and for executing judgment. And of course, executing judgment, what is that? Why is this judgment being executed? Because of the saints' request, their petition in chapter 6, verse 10, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" That's what's happening. Is those who dwell on the earth, the idolatrous, evil, wicked people, are being judged. So the bowl, the judgment of the bowls, is now resumed in chapter 15, 5 through 8. And we're going to see when we get in chapter 16, chapter 16 is going to explain the contents of each of these woes of the judgments of the bowls. And as we've been alluding to, some argue that the trumpets are different judgments than the bowls. And here's their rationale. Because, number one, they say the first four trumpets appear to affect only nature, whereas the first four bowls affect wicked people. And the second primary reason that they say that the trumpets are different from the judgment of the bowls is that the first six trumpets are said to be partial in their effect, whereas the bowls seem to have a universal effect. And so, we're going to have to, yes, we may notice some what appear to be differences, but the similarities are going to vastly overshadow the differences. Generally, what the trumpets state more figuratively, and I would say even dramatically, you know, we see the idea of figurative seems to be dramatic, but this is going to be with the trumpets, as we've seen, figuratively dramatic. So figuratively and dramatically, the bowls are going to state overall, more generally, in a far more direct way and completely. Whereas you're going to have the idea of a third, a third, a third with the trumpets, you're going to have no such one-third judgment rendered. It's going to be complete. So the difference in the relative extent of their effect may suggest that the trumpets are part of a larger process of judgment, which, according to the bowls, strikes the entire world at the same time. And I know this is a deeper discussion because we really don't usually have trumpet and bowl discussion in Revelation, but this is, it's a fascinating study and discussion, and God gave it to us for us to contemplate and try to understand what he means by the judgment of the trumpets and the judgment of the bowls. Both trumpets and bowls present each of the plagues in the same order. And interestingly, we'll have to develop this more, but the plagues striking the earth, and in I even have this mapped out, which we'll come back to this and we'll show in more detail. But for now, this is just an overall summary, something for you to study and to contemplate in advance of that discussion. Plagues striking the earth, the sea, rivers, the sun, the realm of the wicked with darkness, the Euphrates, together with influencing the wicked by demons, and judgment, with the same imagery of lightning, sounds, thunders, earthquake, and hell. That's a lot to take in. We'll back up. We'll show this on a chart. I went ahead and the previous chart we looked at, I added this in to show you how this stuff lines up far better, because this is a lot to take in. But we're going to just try to give perhaps a basic. I know this may seem deep, but a basic view of Revelation. To see, here's what we see with the trumpets, here's what we see with the bowls. And to see that, in fact, I believe the evidence is going to lead us to conclude that we're going to have the judgment that both the bowls and the trumpets and the bowls are trying to express, seen in two different ways. So the overwhelming likeness of the trumpets and bowls is a result of both being modeled on the Exodus plagues. And we'll plan to talk about that in a little bit more detail. So a lot of background and a lot to try to put together. But once you see the picture, that's what we're really shooting for, is trying to see the big picture of this. But you either have to try to see the trumpets as a separate judgment than the bowls, or you see them as the same kind of judgment, but a different picture of judgment, just as we saw a different picture of God's redeemed people, two pictures of the same group. Just as we saw with the background in Joel 3, verse 13, you have God's judgment can be seen as both a grain harvest and a grape harvest, and treading the winepress of God's wrath. I believe we're going to have a very similar concept of a dual-fold picture of these plagues in God's judgment. We'll stop here. Our time's gone. We'll pick back up, Lord willing, in this discussion. If you're here today, if we can help in any of your spiritual needs, would you come as we stand?